Kids, welcome to episode 9 of Spinning Yarns with Nick and Paddy, a podcast created by my writing partner Nick Petru and I, Patrick McCarthy, where we'll be immersing ourselves in the world of the written word and attempting to be as entertaining and as smart-ass as possible about Oriental rugs. Before we commence, we'd like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land in which we meet, the Whadjuk people of the Noongar Nation, and pay respects to their continuing culture and the contribution they make to the life of this city and this region and their leaders, past, present and emerging. How the fuck are you, Nick?
I have postnatal depression.
I didn't even know you were pregnant, bro. What a devo.
Yeah, well, I was, but it's postnatal.
Ah, my mistake.
I think that's how it works anyway.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah. So a lot's happened in the last 2 weeks.
It has. No, I'm doing pretty well, man.
Mm.
Yeah. Finally Friday.
Nice.
Not because I'm looking forward to the end of the week, but because I'm looking forward to this.
Friday.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, fuck. I had COVID last week, so...
you did.
Yeah, I'm feeling superb. My lungs have reduced in size by 50%. They look like currants.
That's from the smoking, I would say.
No, not the smoking.
No.
Cheers, bruh.
Cheers, mate.
More Jack Daniels in my tea. Fucking earth, wholesome ass.
Read a story already.
Oh, yeah. Forgot why we were here. So today we're going to be reading a short story by Nick Petru called Brain Slug. A poem I've written about my mum called The Lady With Red In Her Hair, and also a little piece I've written about an artist I really enjoy called Billie Holiday.
And before we get going, Brain Slug was published in Antipodean SF, an Australian publication.
Oh, wow. Good for you.
Yeah. Well, no, I have to acknowledge it.
Okay, here we go. Brain Slug by Nick Petru. I must admit, I was hesitant to take the job on Ida 4's Jungle Moon when I heard about the brain slugs. But now, I can't imagine my life without the little guy. Saprilla was one printed dinner or I'm not in the mood from picking me up with her forelegs and chewing off my head. I figured we could use some time apart and some cash, so I hollowed my colleagues from the old days and asked if they could use an extra pair of hands on any jobs this side of the galaxy. They told me about their next big target, and then... the brain slugs. With a bounty like that, I could have kept Saprilla from ritualistically killing me for another rotation or so, maybe even rented as a shoebox topside. When she asked if I was getting myself into trouble again, I made up something about some prospectors who needed protection from the moon's endemic fauna. She wasn't vibrating her underwings, but she seemed to buy it. As I climbed into my skiff, she scuttled up to the passenger side window. I saw myself a thousandfold in her eyes, my head a caterpillar protein sausage sticking out of a bun. I want stability. A family. That's why I'm taking this gig, Saprilla. Last one off-world, I promise. Oh, I hate how this sounds, Tyler. But put a baby in me when you come back or don't come back at all. The moon was a malachite marble orbiting a gobstopper. White shell sucked to the cyan and orange beneath. As we got closer, blue-green pockmarks swelled into being. We aimed the bow at the largest of the lakes and held course. We landed on a slab of limestone on the lake's southern bank. I thumbed a tube of flechette into my slinger, stuck my head into a glass bubble, and walked the plank. The jungle sounded like Saprilla molt crying inside my skull. A buttery haze clung to everything. Insects snaked through it in schools a million strong. The trees reminded me of buried footage from Earth, that rainforest named after that tech company or whatever it was. A kilometer-thick buffer of putrid reeds encircled the lake, and I could barely see water from where I was on the ground. We were just about to power up the bots and start hacking our way through the jungle when our target seized the initiative and opened fire. A plasma bolt sizzled at the side of Prisprata's scaled head. Two more turned Elodine into a steaming pile of blueberry pulp. A neon pink volley cut a tree in half. I tried to dive out of the way as it crashed down on top of me. Slipping in and out of consciousness, I watched a hazard yellow crayon melt down a reed stem and then pulsate over the earth towards my face. As it squelched up the side of my helmet and in through the jagged hole just in front of my nose, I noticed a cluster of sharp tendrils feeling out in all directions from its front-facing end. Among the tendrils was a tiny horizontal slit pulled into what I now know was a smile. I remember Pain, Dima dragging my fat ass up the ramp, and yellow veins spreading through the blackness of my semi-conscious mind before throbbing and then fading into it. When I came to, I thought the anesthetic was causing some sort of lag between my body and brain. I climbed out of the healing tank just fine, got dressed and chugged down 2 cylinders of nutrient water, no problem at all. When I went to the lavatory, I looked back and checked my stool before ejecting into the vacuum. Strange, but no cause for alarm. It was when I tried to print something to eat that I started panicking. I saw the icon for macaroni and cheese and watched my index finger press chicken, air fried. The mess doors flung open and Dima lumbered through. Something's wrong was on the tip of my tongue, but I owe you one, D, is what came out of my mouth. I was freaking the hell out, but all I could do was watch as someone else steered my life. I had plenty of time to think about my new situation on the way back to Hejero 3, but it wasn't until I got home to Saprilla that I put my feet up, so to speak. I climbed out of my skiff and pulled Saprilla against my chest. We went inside, and I stroked her throat glands and sucked her antenna, tasting her bittersweet oils as I had never before. Her carapace felt warm and soft, and after her abdomen quivered and decompressed over the bed, oozing a clear fluid into the mattress, she said, "Shit, Tyler. I didn't even know your species was capable of that." Within 5 rotations, I had worked the galactic stock market as I had worked Saprilla's insectoid body, turning the 6 figures I had split with Dima into 9. I came home from the gym in a Metropolis Mark V and gave my old skiff to the Agamid family below us. We left our dim apartment in the crust and sailed the kilometre-wide topside streets, a real sunset on our backs, solar-celled space elevators and skyscrapers casting their shadows over the planet. Myself as much of a passenger as my beautiful wife, I pointed out one of the skyscrapers ahead, dark green foliage pouring from its every balcony. "That one. That's our new home." Saprilla rested her head on my shoulder.
"And we'll be needing the extra space too."
For the first time since Ida 4, the yellow veins throbbed in the forefront of my mind. They tugged on my nervous system and rotated my head until I faced Saprilla's abdomen, where, beneath the surface, there spread a cluster of veins in kind. I smiled. The end. What the absolute fuck?
That was a great reading, man. Well done.
Thanks, dude.
I think you nailed the voice, hey.
What, Saprilla's?
Yeah, that too, but even just the protagonist, like the POV, it was just like nice and peppy. It was exactly how I imagined that character would speak.
Yeah, that's what I really liked about it. It wasn't like he was a guide showing us this extraordinary sci-fi world, as a lot of sci-fi writing sort of tends to do, especially if it's coming from or it's born from the imagination of the writer.
Yeah.
It was just like this guy's like fucking daily routine.
Yeah.
Like it was like this really high-end sci-fi concept and these terms that were just thrown in very, very casually. And he did seem like he was just an average Joe, a little bit fed up with his lot at home, a bit underachieving, not very wealthy and and under the pump from his insectoid missus. And
aren't we all?
Aren't we all? Yes. I'm so sorry, Alex and Sarah. We love you. How did that, where did that come from? Did you get a brain slug?
Yes.
Yeah.
No, I'd be successful if I had a brain slug.
Well, evidently. He becomes like American Psycho.
I can't really remember where I got the idea from. I think I just wanted to write something like pulpy and fun and something science fiction as well. And I think I also wanted to dabble with, you know, like building a world through like subtle suggestions. So like you said, like I'm not sitting there describing like, you know, how the cars fly and the ships work and where like their planet is and how they got there and what happened to Earth exactly. Mm. It's all just kind of hinted at. And I think that leaves some room for the reader to kind of build the world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
I feel
like
blanks.
You get these little hints of it, you know?
Mm.
And just the, it was really fun to read from that perspective because sometimes we read things that are like, I mean, we really enjoy them, obviously, like, because sometimes they're quite dour or maybe have a lot of florid language, beautiful language, but quite florid. And this was just like, yeah, like, I love being that average Joe in a very, very, very alien landscape.
Yeah, no, definitely. And even though the language itself wasn't, you know, too flowery, I found it also, like, you know, it having been a while since I'd listened to this story or especially edited this story, I found it quite vivid as well.
Yeah.
There's some nice imagery in there, and I'm kind of proud of old Nick. Good on you, mate.
Well done, old Nick. Where have you gone?
Yeah, what happened? What am I writing about now?
Shit.
That had a happy ending.
It did, yeah, yeah. Well, him and Saprilla are now wealthy and they have a lovely penthouse suite and they've got a nice yellow baby on the way.
Mm.
It's really cool, you know?
Well, that kind of brings up like a theme, actually. It's like, are you better off when someone else is calling the shots, you know?
And evidently, yes.
Yeah.
Buy a brain slug off eBay ASAP.
All right. Yeah, thanks for reading that, mate.
That's cool, bro. That's what we do. So next, poem.
Yeah. Yes.
Let's do poem. The Lady with Red in Her Hair by Patrick McCarthy. From the land of her birth to the ends of the earth, they sing of a lady with red in her hair. She had hungered for more and without fear closed a door, taking with her all those she forever will bear. She set a course for the beach, a realm many don't reach, with a vivid desire to dream and to dare, where she's carved out a piece of fortune without cease, and accomplishing all with a magical flair. She's helped beloveds grow tall, wept for the great and the small, and adored all in a manner that's rare, taking one by the hand, aiding all us to stand, eventually leading us up through the air, where together we'll soar toward heavenly shores, where we'll sing of the lady with red in her hair. Thanks.
No, thank you, Patrick. What the bloody hell was that one about?
That one was about my mummy.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I figured...
I think I'm seeing her later tonight, actually. Should confirm that.
You're seeing my mum? Oh. Oh, because my dad's out of town. Yeah, and I just... well, no, I like writing poems about my friends and family. You know, they're always... we've had such extraordinary times, and they're always... they're just really full, brilliant, vibrant characters.
Mm.
So I appreciate writing about them, you know. I think they appreciate it too. I've read out one about my sister and dad and a few friends on here, so I figured I'd do the one about my mum as well. She's very much an aspiring figure, man. She's like 5'1½", small, tiny little Scottish ginger woman. But she's just so powerful, you know. Like, she's just such a charismatic force. She's helped out so many different people. Her friends and family adore her. And I just figured the only poem I could really think to write about, especially at that time anyway, was something fanciful and speaking about her in terms of like an almost fantastical figure. And I just thought it was quite pretty. I liked the rhyme scheme too. Like, I liked making every refrain, like the third line of every stanza, because it's only, you know, little triplets rhyme with each other. So, you know, hair, beware, dare, and just keep that consistent throughout. Yeah, it was really enjoyable to write. It wasn't too difficult either. You know, mum was quite She's quite lovely.
Nice work, mate. And I think we were saying earlier that that was the last that you had in the bank, and that now we are, you know, out of backup content.
Yeah, that's kind of what we wanted to do, eh? Like, I'm quite glad to be done with all my backlog, you know?
Yeah.
I think you've still got a couple of stories in the bin to do.
I do, yeah.
It's quite exhilarating. Like, when I had COVID last week, I wrote furiously, wrote a couple of essays and a couple of poems. A couple still need editing and everything, but it's like the pressure being cranked up is fucking great incentive to write. You know?
So you work better under pressure, you'd say?
Definitely, yeah. Like, when I'm fucking sweating.
I shall keep applying it.
Yeah, it's on now. It is on. But anyway, thanks. In this episode's segment of Stories We Love, I'm just going to briefly speak about a little experience I had with a singer named Billie Holiday. I never regret the years I'm giving. They're easy to give when you're in love. I'm happy to do whatever I do for you. We often mark the progression of our lives and the steady march of the years with what I like to call the great occasions. Birthdays, weddings, births and deaths. Seismic events everyone understands to be important, times relevant to us all. But as I've gotten older, I've realised that, more often than not, life is really all about moments. There are moments that stick with you, that scar you, instants that resonate for good and colour your time on this earth in shades and hues you couldn't possibly have ever imagined. They can be hugely momentous, yet they can also be small, mere fragments of time that may initially seem infinitesimal, but grow into unforeseen, extraordinary significance years down the line. I was 14 in the year 2008, half the age I am now, when such a moment gifted itself to me. My best friend Jack was at his mum's for the weekend, and I was staying over the whole time because it was always a good laugh there. His mum was hilarious and cooked well, her home was lovely, and there was a huge, lamely exclusive golf course just over the fence that we liked to jump into so we could cause the tosspot golfers some havoc. Good times. For this weekend in question, however, we had one plan for how to spend our time, and one plan only. To get utterly and brilliantly lost playing Fallout 3, a video game set in a post-apocalyptic world sometime after a nuclear holocaust left the entire planet in a permanent state of absolutely fucked. It was a grim game, but possessed a fantastically mordant wit, offered players a ridiculous amount of freedom, and was undeniably a blast to play. You'd roam about this ravaged wasteland, scavenging for resources, uncovering secrets, and amassing an arsenal with which to take on the crazed, sometimes terrifying inhabitants of this nuclear hell. Now, at some point while Jack and I were playing, we acquired a radio. And shortly after mucking about with its signal, we accidentally managed to tune into the frequency of a distant radio station called Galaxy News. The host DJ, a friendly man named Three Dog, would chat for brief spells about the world and its goings before playing beautiful jazz music from the pre-war era for players to enjoy while they explored all the ruins of civilization. I spoke at the outset about moments and referred to one in particular. This is that moment. I was sat there beside Jack, my bestest friend, when Three Dog stopped speaking and played us a song. A song I'll never forget. The soft tinkling of piano keys by Teddy Wilson, Buster Bailey on the clarinet, followed closely by Lester Young's saxophone, and then the words. Living for you is easy living. It's easy to live when you're in love, and I'm so in love. There's nothing in life but you. These lovely, happy words were sung in a strange way I had never heard before. It was essentially a sweet little poem about the pleasures of being in love, but in execution it was so much more complex than that. I remember sitting there whilst Jack controlled our character, and I was completely transfixed. At that time I was mostly listening to Eminem, and only saw a girlfriend in terms of someone who would help me practice my tonguing, but when Billie Holiday's plaintive, world-weary, gorgeous voice played through those speakers that day. Something within me stirred, some dormant aspect I couldn't quite understand yet certainly felt. And even though I woke up the next day and remained an Eminem fan who knew nothing about love, things were different.
You got your first boner. Is that what we're talking about here?
Yes. It gets so grim here as well. You just fucked it. Just sitting there erect next to my best friend. I had no idea how different things would be. How could I? Life as a 14-year-old is so hectic, you have so much going on all the time, and no matter how dynamic and immersive it was to hear that song while spending time with my best friend, it was, in the rhythms of my 14-year-old life, just a moment. Small. Infinitesimal. By the time of Jack's death in October 2017, I had become a real fan of jazz, especially of that old style popularized by Holiday and that of her contemporaries, Ella Fitzgerald, Louis Armstrong, the Ink Spots, and so on. To this day, on the fringes of my 28th birthday, they still speak to me in a way few, if any other artists do, and I'm eternally thankful for the wonder they instill, for the memories they unearth, for the moments they live to serve. And that whenever I miss my friend, whenever my heart feels ready to tear, I can ask Billy for help and revisit that moment with Jack once more. Thanks.
Fantastic, mate.
Thanks, baby.
I wanted to address one point, though.
He was talking about my erection.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, damn.
Look, I'm not sure if that's going to make the cut yet. We'll see.
Oh, shit.
Do you want it to make the cut?
It's pretty funny.
I don't want to destroy your tone. But actually, what I wanted to bring up, so this is our second song, or at least thing to do with music that we've spoken about right now. The first one was a little clearer to me how it was about storytelling, but how was that essay about storytelling?
I think I had an idea about what it was about. I was going to write about just the song and about her. And then I was like, you know what? This is just going to be like us speaking about her life and in ways that have been spoken about for about 90 years now. You know what I mean? Like that's how long, I think she died in like 1956.
Oh, okay.
You know what I mean? So it's like, okay, maybe I just talk about me again and myself and maybe the first time I heard her. She was just very, I was just listening to her a lot when I was sick with COVID. I just love listening to that kind of music, but also her specifically. I just recalled the first time I ever heard her and it was that moment. And I just, it came clearly to me, but honestly, I finished that and I was like, I have no idea what this piece is about. All I have to bank on is that hopefully the sentences sound nice.
Well, and like, In a meta way, the essay was great and it took us through a story. Like, it was satisfying in itself. But I feel like in terms of, like, analysing a story, that wasn't clear to me in that essay.
Yeah, it was and mental.
It's just interesting, though, like, because that's... It's still an inspiration for a story. It's still something that inspired you to write this essay. So it's kind of... I don't know. I guess it is kind of vaguely about storytelling. And
yeah. I guess so. I mean, it is. I was coming in here going like, okay, Nick's either going to say nothing about it or he's going to specifically dissect it. And I'm kind of happy you did the second bit.
Well, yeah. I don't know if I can go much deeper than that with it, but it's just interesting to see where we're taking the content here. Obviously, we want to try and keep it storytelling focused, but like that to me, I wouldn't say was too like, out of the court, you know?
Yeah.
We can do something different. So we got to wrap up the episode, right? So we'll get through all of that stuff first. But then instead of reading a quote, I've got something that I'm going to read, which you don't know anything about right now. So it's going to be fun.
Ooh.
So before we get into that though, like,
<I'm sweating.
laughs> yeah, me too. Yeah. If you want to learn more about the podcast, go to spinningyarnspodcast.com. On there, you can find all of our social media stuff and our Buy Me a Coffee page where you can give us money, which we love. And I think that's all we really need to get through. Again, yeah, we release an episode every 2 weeks at the moment, but if we can get more support, then we'll try and make that every week. All right, so you sent me this, I don't even know, like a year plus ago, maybe 2 years ago.
So we're doing this instead of a quote.
Yeah, instead of a quote.
Not Transformers.
No, not Transformers. Nothing to do with Transformers this time.
Enemy Scrotum.
But yeah, you sent me this a few years ago, and I was like, I'm going to keep this. I'm going to keep it forever. And then one day I'm going to read it to you again. And, you know, maybe I could have waited another decade or whatever, but I'm going to do it now. It's kind of sweet.
Wait, so just to be clear, this is something I sent you.
You sent me a PDF. Yeah. Dearest Nicholas, I hope Melbourne's treating you well. I've loved adventuring through the Philippines and Sri Lanka next, but it's come with some unfortunate caveats. Firstly, not only did Rosie's MacBook break, but I lost my little laptop's charger, so we've been fucked when it comes to being involved in most forms of media, and coupled with the apocalyptic lack of internet in this otherwise perfect... What is I-D-Y-L-L?
Like an idol. Like okay. Idyllic. Like
I've never heard that word before. In this otherwise perfect idol, it's been something of a privilege to cast our devices aside in lieu of absorbing the trip to the utmost of our capacity to do so, even if it's been somewhat forced upon us. When I return to Oz, I plan on making up for it to everyone in any way I can, yourself included. Secondly, as for my writing, I've been back on it hard ways since leaving London. I've got a couple of decent short stories under my belt, and my travel diary has been not only consistent, but obsessive. These days, it makes more sense to write about my experience than tell others about them, and it's led to an adoption of reticence and reclusiveness, a lifestyle I've genuinely relished so far, to tell you the truth. But the time is fast approaching to regroup with those I love, and I'll be certain to show you what I've written when I return. Melbourne's on the card soon, brother. As always, I'll continue to check every link you send me and every piece of writing and content you release on your Facebook page. I'm extremely proud of you, not only for who you are as a person, which is in no uncertain terms extraordinary, but also for how you're genuinely turning your obvious talent into work. Your diligence and dedication is, as ever, an inspiration to me, and I hope that one day soon your good example will rub off on me. I love you, Nick. You're a great friend. I'm sorry about the distance between us in all the various forms in which it has taken, physically, emotionally, spiritually. I believe grief is to blame. Its insidious tendrils run so deep within my being that professional help when I get home is certainly the only way out. Just know that I'll be home soon, and we can get back to hangs and the creative chats we both obviously crave. Your pal, the scrub, Paddy. P.S. To this day, I still believe in our Australians project, even if we have lost out on the name. It's genuinely hilarious, inventive, engrossing, and ultimately empathetic idea, and I sincerely hope we go for it at some point. Love, Heart.
Okay, two notes. One, that was so homoerotic that I'm sitting here erect. And two,
that is the theme of this week's episode.
I am an amazing writer. Wow.
Yeah, no,
dude, nice.
Well,
you
saved
that. That's beautiful.
Yeah, I did.
Fuck yeah. Fuck, I completely forgot I sent you anything warm or friendly or encouraging or supportive.
How long ago was that? You're talking about the Philippines and Sri Lanka, right?
That would have been like 2.5 years ago, man.
Oh, shit.
So it was like, I came back to Perth, I think late 2019. So yeah, so I was in Melbourne like a month before then. And that's when I saw you, Sarah, and we saw Rian and Lana and those two American lads.
Yeah, I like them. They're
Alec
cool.
and Riley. Yeah, they're fucking cooked. They're from Michigan. How you doing, Patty? We're going to go ice skating on the lake. You know, like, fuck me. You guys are so wholesome. Oh, nice one, dude. That was great.
Yeah. No.
Oh, cheers, bro.
Cheers, dude.
And now we're doing the podcast. This is wicked. Look at us. We're stars.
I know. It's exactly what we were talking about in there. We have come together. We've made something happen. Fucking finally. Hey.
No doubt. No doubt. Well, we're only like nearly 40.
Dude, I'm turning 29 in less than a month. That's scary.
Yeah, dude. You look it as well.
I've amounted to nothing.